Welcome to the Queen City Preachers Podcast. I'm Pastor Andrew.
And I'm Pastor Molly.
And your regular weather report is
what's
a little...
the weather like
partly
today?
Cloudy outside with a nice, high of 70s or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, a little more humid today.
But not bad. I mean, this is the UP.
My hair's a little extra curly today, yeah. So that's how I noticed.
You noticed the curliness?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes, that's how I judge the weather forecast. I don't look outside. I just say, how curly is my hair today?
All right. Mm-hmm. So in the dead of winter, it's just straight.
No. But it's less frizzy.
It's less frizzy. All right. Yeah. No, so it's lovely. We are definitely in summer in the UP.
Mm-hmm. Some days.
So yeah, we were wintry the other day, but it's just lovely. Mm-hmm. It's the type of day where you're like, hey, I want to go to the beach and have a fish fry. Mm. Or share with friends, right?
Yeah.
Which is what happens in the Gospel of John.
Yeah, wow. I would love to go to the beach and just eat a barley loaf.
A barley loaf and some fish that you're hoping has been smoked or dehydrated or something.
When I read one commentary, it said it was probably dried fish.
Dried fish.
Which doesn't sound awesome.
It's not really. I mean, I...
Jerky fish. Is that what it would be like?
Yeah, and it's not like smoked salmon. Mm. This is dry that you need to kind of reconstitute with some moist... It's not lox. No.
I could go for a lox bagel with cream cheese. I'm kind of hungry. It's almost lunchtime.
So anyway, there's food going on in this story.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about food, so don't listen to our tummies grumble. Listen to the reading of the feeding of the 5,000 in the Gospel of John today.
Yeah.
Yep, we're starting. So we're in chapter 6, and this is the beginning of a 5-week bread series.
Yeah, this is a full-on John marathon for the rest of the summer, and a lot of bread.
All John every day.
Yep. Yep. And so you're going to get very familiar with the 6th chapter of John.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Some would say you might be an expert by the end.
Yeah. Or sick of it, depending on how you're feeling. Because you may recall, before Pastor Molly reads the reading, you may recall that John is really into imagery. And so we have Jesus is the way, Jesus is the light, Jesus is the bread of life. We have all this imagery. And so for the next 6 weeks, we're full on bread imagery of who Jesus is in bread. So, There are some different angles of it, but it's a lot of the same. So we're going to try our best to preach through this in creative, interesting ways, but just realize too that you may be sick of John's bread, and Jesus has bread by the time. Not that you'll be sick of communion, but you'll just be tired of hearing John's words about it.
Didn't we hear this last week? But maybe it's not just the imagery. Maybe it's the nicknames, right?
The nicknames?
Nicknames for Jesus.
Hey, bread.
That's what we can, the route maybe we'll go down. Let's pray about that.
Jesus is our main loaf.
Yeah. My main loaf, Jesus. He ain't no fancy loaf. He's a barley loaf.
He's a country loaf.
He's a barley loaf.
Yeah.
Okay, let's read the text.
Let's.
Before this gets sillier. All right, chapter 6. After this, Jesus went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, also called the Sea of Tiberias. A large crowd kept following him because they saw the signs that he was doing for the sick. Jesus went up the mountain and sat down there with his disciples. Now the Passover, the festival of the Jews, was near. When he looked up and saw a large crowd coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread for these people to eat?" He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. Philip answered him, 6 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each of them to get a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are they among so many people?" Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." Now there was a great deal of grass in the place, so they sat down, about 5,000 in all. Then Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated, so also the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were satisfied, he told his disciples, "Gather up the fragments left over, so that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up, and from the fragments of the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten, they filled 12 baskets. When the people saw the sign that he had done, they began to say, "This is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world." When Jesus realized that they were about to come and take him by force to make him a king, he withdrew again to the mountain by himself. When evening came, his disciples went down to the sea, got into a boat, and started across the sea to Capernaum. It was now dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. The sea became rough because a strong wind was blowing. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and coming near the boat, and they were terrified. But he said to them, "It is I, do not be afraid." Then they wanted to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat reached the land toward which they were going. Here ends the reading.
Yeah, so yep. We get that bonus text.
Yeah, which I find kind of annoying.
Well, it's annoying that the lectionary throws them together.
Yeah, it's like both of those are great stories.
They're cool stories.
What did we have last week? Nap time. You know, we could have had some walking on water.
Well, we need
week.
Nap time too. I mean, let's be honest. We need respite.
And you did it. Yeah.
I mean,
it was good. And what you did with it was great. So, you know, it's good.
But
why?
Yeah.
But why?
You know? I know.
I think the answer to the but why is probably because we have this feeding story that leads into them being like, who is Jesus, right? Like, and then here's this affirmation of who Jesus is.
Totally. And the, you know, how the NRSV, the New Revised Standard Version, the translation we use, how it translates the "it is I, do not be afraid." Mm-hmm. The traditional, like the Greek, is literally "I am, do not be afraid." And that harkens us back to Moses. It harkens back to who God is in language. So you're absolutely right. There's this huge kind of like leading up to the reveal of Jesus. Like, so miracles, feeding, that says something. But the water, this is really showing you who Jesus is.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe it's the Moses parallel, right? Both of these stories are connected by the Moses parallel.
Because they are, and actually that even continues further into this chapter, which we'll probably explore later because we're going to be here for a while.
Tune in next time to hear about that one.
More Moses.
We have, right, like them asking and like confirming, the crowd confirms that he is like one of the prophets of old, and we get this feeding story, right? And it makes us think back to Moses and in the desert and the feeding of the Israelites with the manna, right? The what is this? I love that. I think you said that the other week.
Yeah, what manna literally means is what is this?
Yeah,
it's
but
fabulous.
That's always been something that's like my favorite. What is this?
Yeah. And I think to tie into that too, into the feeding story. I mean, so feeding 5,000. There are lots of, you've probably heard this story before. You've heard it interpreted in different ways. There are many ways to think about this text.
You can do it really allegorical, but wouldn't recommend.
Yeah.
You know?
Augustine and his allegories. But like it's a rich text and you've probably heard it a lot. One of the things though to think about in the context of this is what are their expectations? What are their hopes? And what are they thinking in the terms of who Jesus is related to who Moses is? And are they asking Jesus as a prophet, like, feed us? Or is it an expectation of a human need of that Jesus act like Moses, do this? Are they misplacing what their expectations? Are they making this, like, rather than asking God for food that they're hungry, which the people, you know, this harkens back to Israel in the desert, like, we're hungry, feed us, right? Like, it's grumbles and God provides. And is this a parallel that has them hungry and complaining, thinking that Jesus can supply and forgetting that it's God who supplies, which is also a tie into the water, like the I am, that like it's God who's actually supplying.
But in asking Jesus to supply, they are asking God.
They
supply,
are, but
right?
Like, do they recognize that? Do they get that?
But they didn't ask for anything either.
I know, right? That's a whole nother piece of this. But like, I'm just trying to, like, there's this tension between those two experiences of wilderness wandering, of being hungry and grumbling, of it.
I think what it comes down to is that self-sufficiency, right? Where in the wilderness, the Israelites are like, oh, like, we'll just take matters into our own hands and we'll just go back to Egypt because at least we weren't starving there, right? Like, we'll take care of our needs ourselves in this way that is, you know, it's not going to really be life-giving to us. And it's not the path that we're on, the God path. It's not, you know, it's not God's will, really, right? And in this sense, we get the the control factor and the desire for self-sufficiency in the words of the disciples, saying, oh, like we don't have anything for these people, right? And like, right. We don't make any money. We don't have the wages. And I wonder about them thinking like, even, you know, if we even give a little bit to these people, then like we won't have something.
It's a scarcity mindset, mm-hmm, right? I mean, yes. it's that, what are the resources we have? We don't have resources to do this. Mm-hmm. The only way out of this is to do what we know what to do, uh-huh, right? Like,
try
and go
to
backwards,
figure it out.
Right?
Try to have control over it,
right? Or figure out the money situation, or mm-hmm, and John does this differently. By the way, this text is in all the Gospels. It's mm-hmm, one of the only miracle stories that's in all the Gospels.
This one happened.
So we're pretty sure this one happened. So when thinking about it, it's interesting that John adds that little subtext of he said this to test him, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
Jesus knows. Don't forget that Jesus knows everything.
but it raises that question of what, you know, how do we problem solve? Mm-hmm. How do we trust in God's provisions?
We don't. We trust in ourselves,
right? Yeah. And
that's what the disciples tell us, right? We're always trying to trust in ourselves and what we know and like how much power we can have over a situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just as the Israelites were trying to do, right? They were trying to find their own way.
Yeah.
And God said, nope, here's what you need. And in this situation, too, they're like, we got to find our own way or like send these people away. God says, nope.
God says, nope. Mm-hmm. Yeah. God says, nope. And God says, kind of as a by the way, too, in like this subtext in the water, things like, I don't have to prove myself to you. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Like there's kind of like this, can you trust, right? Like that I am who I am, right? I mean, using that language, but like, can you trust this rather than mm-hmm, trying to fall back on those reliances that you have?
Yeah.
And I
wonder about that too, because like with the feeding, right? Do they even trust it? But God does it anyway, right? God's going to show them anyway. Just like the Israelites, they're like, they don't really trust it. But God does it anyway.
God does it anyway. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is like the walking on water story. I'm sorry, just like to stay with this for just a second,
no,
too.
I haven't thought about the walking on water story at all. So let's go there.
Because it's the second I am statement. Mm-hmm. And the first one is the woman at the well in John 4.
Ah.
And thinking,
say more.
And so thinking about the woman at the well, right? The woman at the well that Jesus, it's an unexpected encounter. Mm-hmm. She's there. There are these narratives of shame that she's there because it's a time that she won't bump into other people. Jesus says, I know everything about you. Mm-hmm. She says, how do you know all this? Blah, blah, blah. She says, give me that living water. He's like, I am the living water. Mm-hmm. And then she goes back and tells everybody, right? But like the reveal to that is that Jesus saying, I am life in this way that you cannot imagine, and in a way where society has stripped life from you, right? And here they are after the feeding of the 5,000, right? I mean, and this is really interesting because, right, they're trying to get away. Like, we don't actually, in John, mm-hmm, this is kind of crazy, like the text we read last Sunday, we don't really know whether they actually got to the deserted place because they were headed there and then the crowds came. Right, we don't know how much time they actually had away, mm-hmm, and here they are trying to get away. The crowds are there; they have to feed them. Then they're trying to get away again before they make him a king. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of that anxiety of the world around them and the pressures, what the society is trying to say about who he is, mm-hmm, and here Jesus walks on water and says, "Nope,
yeah,
I am."
There's a lot of things within.
And I kind of love that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things within these texts that's kind of you can't box me in.
Yeah,
right? And that's kind of what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
With the,
it's a setting aside of the norms and the mm-hmm, expectations, right?
Yes, it's the disciples kind of not thinking outside of the box for what could happen when the people need to be fed, and then it is also I like the part after Jesus says the I am statement, do not be afraid. It says they wanted to take him into the boat. Right? Like there's this sense of, right? There's like these human senses of control, right? self-sufficiency, control, and wanting to place that control upon God, and God kind of flipping the script that says, nah, like, nope again. Here's my nope again.
Yeah.
No, your mind of self-sufficiency and scarcity is not the way. Here's the way. Here's the abundance of the 5 loaves and 2 fish turning into 12 baskets that are left over at the end. And no, like, here's your fear of, like, the miraculous encounter on the water and wanting to control it by getting Jesus into the boat. No, like, that's not, you know.
Yeah. And as you say that, I wonder what that tells us about anxiety.
Ugh, I don't know. Do we want to go there? I'm just kidding.
Right? But like that question of
where... Our own anxiety.
Well, right. But like, where do we place it? Mm-hmm. Do we let it build because from that place of scarcity, from that place of control, mm-hmm. we have to be the solution.
Yeah.
Or we have to at least find the solution. Mm-hmm. Right?
When do we know what God's solution is?
Yeah. And the reality is that, you know, I mean, understanding God's solution is in many ways an act of discernment and silence to be able to hear, mm-hmm. right? To be present to God's solution. Mm-hmm. Because if we're constantly looking at ourselves, are we actually aware of what's really going on around us? Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'm curious with that tension of this, just thinking about crowds, thinking about scarcity, thinking about water and storms. I mean, we had storm passage earlier, right? Mm-hmm. But like thinking about like, where does that fit in our own stories? Mm-hmm. Because many of us do not experience food insecurity, right?
Yeah.
Most of us, I mean, I hope, I pray, most of you have never been out on water during a storm or like, and actually deeply, deeply afraid mm-hmm. in that way. At the same time, many of us have anxieties and fears and that we worry about scarcity in one way or another, about having enough.
Yeah, every time I host a meal for anybody, I worry about whether there will be enough food.
Right.
There never is not enough food, but it's always a worry. And, you know, it's like stopping and asking ourselves that question of, why am I always worried that there isn't going to be enough? Why am I always feeling like I need to be in control of the situation? Like what within me and what within kind of the scripts that I have been told about the world and how the world works makes me think that way? And how does God invite me into thinking about the world in a different way?
That's powerful. Mm-hmm. Like thinking about what is the narrative of shame mm-hmm. that accompanies scarcity?
Yeah.
Because I think for me, it's, I don't want the shame of not having enough. I don't want to not be the host mm-hmm. that supplies abundance. Mm-hmm. I don't want to not have enough supplies. I don't want to run short. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it's because I interpret it as that's a critique on me. And I don't want to look bad. I don't want to be shamed.
Yeah.
And that shame, the reason I say shame, not just look bad too, is because I think that many of us internalize that. Mm-hmm. It's in that that's our failure. That's on us.
Yeah.
And can you imagine being like this group of disciples with like 5,000 people around mm-hmm. being like, oh man,
what are we going to do?
And we look bad. Yeah. We didn't plan for this.
I know. There's another level of shame, right? The feeling foolish. I think that's a shame I really identify with, right?
That too.
They don't have it figured out. They don't know what to do. And
they didn't plan accordingly.
No. And somehow, and like, how could they have, right?
Right. Yeah, there's no way.
That's the beauty of it. It's so ridiculous, right? I think that's the comical moment, right, of the ridiculousness where God says you could never have been self-sufficient enough to fix this situation.
Well, and that's
never have been in control enough to like feed this many people.
I mean, and John does this in some ways. I mean, you know, he takes a note from Mark on this. He does it kind of humorously, right? Mm-hmm. The reality of the story adds humor because of how it plays out. That like mm-hmm. 5 loaves, young boy, like the disciples are like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. And Jesus is like, why are you doubting? Yeah. Right. Like he's saying,
you could never have done it.
Yeah. You can't.
You always needed God.
Yeah.
You always needed God in those situations. So why do you always think that you can do it? Why do you always think that it's just you or on you or like, you know?
Yeah, I think about that, especially like we think about asking for help, right? Many of us stink at that, right?
I would say the majority of us stink at that.
That it's, yet when we actually, when people ask us for help, normally we're flattered.
It's a blessing.
It's a blessing, and we're happy to help if we can, right? And I think about that in the terms of this story too, that Jesus sees people who are beloved children of God, who are more than just that scarcity, more than the anxiety, more than just need, right? The disciples look out there and they're like, we don't have enough. We look foolish. We didn't plan ahead. Nobody thought about this. It's getting late. And Jesus is like, you know, in the miracle of abundance, you know, rather than Jesus manifesting loaves and fishes, in the miracle of abundance, Jesus is like, I bet people thought about this. I bet there's more food in this crowd than you think. Like,
yeah, that begs the question of what kind of a miracle is it?
Yeah, which is a powerful question to wrestle with too.
Yeah, and does it still speak truth no matter what type of miracle it is? I'm saying, you know, is it God who just miraculously like multiplied these loaves, or did one person see someone sharing and like was like, hey, I got a loaf here too, I'll share.
Yeah.
You know, was it that contagion of generosity?
And I'm not sure. I think that they both are powerful in different ways, right? Like,
and they're both God's work.
They are both God's work. And the miraculous multiplying of loaves and fishes, like if it's at Jesus's hands, you know, a la Harry Potter, right? Like a miracle happens. You know, that like, that's awesome. And what does that show? That shows that God cares about human need and that Jesus has the power to meet need, to feed, right? And whether that's metaphorical or literal, right?
It's still true.
It's still true.
That's the thing.
And then you add to the like the abundance story of like just of people sharing. It's that same truth that when God seeks abundance out of us, that it is there, right?
We become the wellspring. Going back to the woman at the well.
Yeah, we become the wellspring. We become the ones who realize that the living water has been shared with us.
Yeah, I like that. That's good.
And so. That's kind of, I mean, I think that's really powerful, like to wrestle with this, like that either of these miracles show God's care for community and God's children. And they do so in ways that are really powerful of exposing both, I would say, our proclivities and our anxieties, as well as sharing what God desires of us.
Yeah.
That the miracle either way shows both.
Yeah. It's always kind of scary to delve into these because it's like, oh man, God knows me so well, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God knows us.
God knows us. Holy Spirit, thank you for knowing me, I think, right?
Yes. Like, yes.
It's that awkwardness of,
and that's
of
the
being known.
Beautiful miraculousness of the Bible, right? That you can always find yourself, right? Even though these people were happening 2,000 years ago, it's you. It's you there too, right?
It's you. It's me. It's all of us.
Yeah, it's you there either being like 6 months wages ain't going to cover this, or it's you being like, hey, I found this little kid who's got like a few loaves. I guess we could use that.
Yeah. Like, can we start here? Right. And that's the other thing too, right? I think about that if we actually dig deep into our own stories and the stories of our communities, we didn't start with 5,000 loaves. Like, right?
Yeah.
Like, we didn't start with a church building like we have now as a congregation, as a community. Like, communities grow, they develop, and they grow out of abundance and out of sharing, but also out of God's provisions, right?
Yeah.
And to remember that that's part of our stories, that it's not that, we're not. That it's twofold, right? That scarcity that we feel now isn't really real.
Yeah.
But also that the abundance we feel now also hasn't always been, always looked the way that it looks now. And that means that God has had a hand in this.
It's humbling in that sense.
It is.
And I think about what we say, you know, around offering or had been for the during COVID times was that, you know, everything is a gift from God.
Yeah.
Right. And we share the gifts because they are a gift to us, kind of.
Yeah.
That's kind of generally kind of what we say. And it makes me think, you know what, it's almost more relatable and powerful to think about this miracle story as a miracle story of somebody saw someone sharing and then shared what they had as well, so that there at the end there was more than enough.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a reminder to us, because we as Americans, for better or for worse, think that everything we do comes from ourselves, right? That it's all based upon us and our hard work. And this is a reminder that no, it's not about the people, right? It's not about, it's about God working through them and God working through them in that way. And so thinking about us and our gifts and our generosity and what we have and the abundance that we already have.
Yeah.
Is God's work.
It is. And I'll tie that really, you know, lightly to communion, which, you know, the other word for is Eucharist, which is gratitude, thanksgiving, right? When we gather as community, what are we doing? We're reminding ourselves of our gratitude, of our thanksgiving for what God gives, for that abundance that God provides, that we have that as part of our rhythm in worship, right? That this is, that there are reminders to remind us that the means of grace is not ours. It's ours in the sense that it has been freely given to us, but we don't create it.
No, it's not us.
It's not us. And I think that many of us would say that that's incredibly freeing, right? And that communion is powerful that way.
It's God's, and there's more than we expect.
Yeah.
Right? That's, right? Because there could have just been enough, right?
Right.
But at the end, there's more than enough.
Yeah. And the poetry of this in John and in imagery is that the 12 baskets, there is enough for all the tribes of
the
Israel.
12 tribes of
12
Israel.
Tribes, which, by the way, harkens back to Moses again, right? That this notion that even those that they're wandering, not all the tribes are necessarily wandering. But at the same time, there's enough for everybody, more than just those who are asking for it. There's enough for everybody.
Yeah.
And that 12 kind of symbolizes the whole world and kind of in imagery. So it's like that there's enough for all the world to be fed. That God's abundance is enough, not just for our community, but for every community.
Yeah. So I think for people listening, it is that. Where do we need to see where God is at work in our abundance, right?
Yeah.
And letting go of what we had talked about before, about the self-control, the self-sufficiency, the shame in all of it, and just recognizing where God is at work in the abundance of our lives.
Yeah. And I would add kind of in connection to at least my sermon last week, but can we allow God to call that out for us?
You know, can we name it?
Can we name it? Because, you know, sometimes we need God to name that we need rest. Can we name that God can name abundance for us and call that out for us too? Can we hold that? Can we actually let that speak rather than have our words of scarcity drown it out?
Yeah, let the worry and the fear that is behind it go.
Yeah, yeah. Can we let go of that?
You don't need to pull Jesus into that boat.
No. You know? Jesus is fine on the water right
Jesus
there.
Jesus is good. Jesus knows what he's doing
and
out there.
It's a reminder that, like, that Jesus is okay, and where do we displace our anxieties? Can we trust? I mean, this could be like a long conversation, right? Like,
we're ending there.
we're gonna wrap up. But like, but at the same time, like that is it's a really powerful thing to wrestle with.
But we can wrestle with it for the next 4 weeks.
Oh Lord, can we?
This is only week one of the 5 weeks.
Jesus's bread is gonna carry us through these weeks. Five bready weeks.
Yeah. Maybe we should have like a different, different loaf theme each week. Like
barley this week.
Barley,
you know.
Maybe like next week we'll like figure out like how it's got a little sourdough flavor.
A little sourdough. Yeah, there you go. Maybe some rye next time.
Oh yeah, maybe a little pita bread action.
There you go. I mean, when they say manna, they say, what is this? So, you know, there's variety. It's possible.
What type of bread you giving up today, God? Do you think God had like a bread of the week, you know, like a bread of the day
thing? Oh,
I'm sure. The manna, like one day it was rye manna, the other day it was sourdough manna, you know, get a little focaccia manna.
A little focaccia manna. Oh, boy.
Today's manna is like real ciabatta-y.
Yeah, you're like, this. I get a hint of olive oil with this. Is this,
ooh,
you know?
Ooh, is this an olive loaf?
Right? Mm. I mean, so anyway, we digress. Thank you for being with us this day. And may this week be an opportunity for you to see abundance rather than scarcity. Mm-hmm. May it be a time that you can actually trust Jesus's presence and abundance, but also that Jesus is there, whether Jesus is in the boat with you or not, right? That God is with you. Mm-hmm. And can you trust that in the midst of all of this world, all the anxieties that we have, all the challenges, all of the needs and desires, may you know that God is there in abundance and that abundant life is what is desired for you. And may you hold on to that, because, man, it is hard.
Yeah, that was so, hard that to turned do into so. A whole blessing there. That was beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, and now may you go into this day however you can and enjoy some bread. Mm. You know, if you're a gluten person or a gluten-free person, you know, enjoy some bread, however you can.
Okay.
So on that cheesy note, you've been listening to the Queen City Preachers podcast. I'm Pastor Andrew.
And I'm Pastor Molly.
Thanks for being with us. Be well, friends.